5% of our state budget goes towards prisons and policing. So these are agencies such as the Department of Corrections and Washington State Patrol that focus on arresting and incarcerating people. And that this disproportionately harms Black and Brown people and does very little to actually improve public safety. On the other hand, the economic security category represents only 2% of our state budget. That's less than half of what goes towards prisons and policing. So this is one area where we really hope to push our lawmakers to make greater investments to be aligned with our values of promoting economic security and well-being.
Welcome to WA Possible, a podcast about what is possible for economic justice in Washington State. This podcast is presented by the Washington State Budget and Policy Center, a research and policy organization working to advance progressive state budget and tax policies that promote racial equity and economic dignity. At the Budget and Policy Center, we dream of a brighter future where everyone has a home to rest in, families can afford child and elder care, and people have enough money to buy the food and resources they need. On WA Possible, we talk with partners, advocates, and staff who are helping make this vision a reality. We know that economic justice is possible here in Washington State because we are building toward it together. I'm Andy Nicholas, Senior Fellow at the Budget and Policy Center. At our organization, one of our key priorities is to ensure the state budget reflects community values. As part of that advocacy, we work to help people across Washington understand the budget process and how to engage in it effectively. We're excited to be doing just that in this podcast episode. The WA Possible team is doing something a bit different. We're sharing a Budget 101 presentation my colleague, policy analyst Tracy Young, gave recently to the Racial Equity Team, a group of lobbyists who advocate on issues related to racial, social, and economic justice at the Washington State Legislature. Tracy shares why the budget is important, what the budget entails, and how it's passed through the legislature. You'll also hear a brief Q&A from the meeting. This presentation includes references to the legislative process, which we cover in detail in our last episode, and it refers to some slides that were shared during the presentation. We will include links to helpful resources at the end of the show. Now let's get to the episode.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me, and I'm so excited to be able to present about the Washington State budget with you all. So I know that most, if not everyone here today is an advocate, and you're all working hard to make sure that your community's needs are met, right? And one of the most critical aspects of that is getting the money to fund your priorities. So my goal today is to pull back the curtain a bit on the state budget process, which is typically a very opaque and confusing process. And to do that, today we will cover seven things: why the budget matters, what the budget funds, the budget process timeline, finding and understanding budget documents, the revenue forecasts, fiscal notes, and provisos. So why does the budget matter? At the Budget and Policy Center, we believe that our state budget reflects our values and is not just a huge spreadsheet of numbers. If we say as a state, right, as Washingtonians, we value education and health and kids and racial equity, then we need to put our money where our mouth is. We need to fully fund schools so that all students can have a great education. We need to fully fund healthcare so that all of our neighbors can receive medical attention when they need it. We need to fund free or reduced cost childcare so that young children can have a solid start in life. In addition, tax justice is racial justice. We can't talk about our state budget without talking about where our money comes from, and that's determined by our tax code. And like every other policy, our tax code can either continue to perpetuate or even exacerbate racial inequities, or it can reduce them. Unfortunately, contrary to what you might think about Washington State as a very progressive state, we have the most inequitable tax code in the country. So people with the lowest incomes pay the most as a share of their income in taxes, while the richest people pay the least in taxes. And that's what this chart shows. As you can see on the left-hand side, the lowest 20% of income earners pay almost 18% of their income in taxes. And on the and as you make more and more, right, each step, you pay less and less in taxes as a share of your income. And on the far right-hand side, you can see that the top 1% of income earners, so people who make more than $545,900 a year, only pay 3% of their income in taxes. So the lowest 20% of income earners are paying 6 times more in taxes as a share of their income than the top 1%. This is extremely regressive. That's why we have this infamous reputation as having the worst in the nation tax code. In a progressive tax system, this chart would be flipped on its head and richer people would pay a higher tax rate because you don't need more than, you know, $500,000 or $1 million to get by. Now, if we break down this data by race, we also see racial inequities in who pays taxes. Now, this figure shows that the Washington's tax code benefits the richest white households at the expense of everyone else. The richest 15% of white households take in nearly half of all the income in the state. So that's the top bar, 45.9%. But they only contribute less than 1/3 of the total taxes paid in the state, or 31.5%. So these and other racist policies have blocked Black, Indigenous, and people of color from building wealth at the benefit of white households. And if we continue to have such a deeply regressive tax code, then Black and Brown people will continue to face systemic barriers to achieving economic security and well-being. All right, so I talked about why the budget matters. Now we're going to go into what the budget funds. And the first thing to know is that there are actually 3 different budgets in our state. There's the transportation budget, capital budget, and operating budget. The transportation budget covers things such as highways and public transportation, like ferries and rail. It also includes bridges and public airports. The capital budget covers all things related to construction and, you know, new buildings. So for example, if our state wanted to invest in 400 new affordable housing units, then this would fall under the capital budget. What we are going to focus on today is the operating budget, and this covers all state operations and services, including state employee salaries and benefits. So this is what our budget funds, and at the Budget and Policy Center, we have divided the state operating budget into 5 value areas, as you can see in this pie chart. That's education and job readiness, effective and accountable government, healthy people and communities, economic security, and prison and policing. And as the pie chart shows, over 3/4 of our state operating budget helps fund vital public services such as public schools, higher education, early learning and childcare, healthcare, and public health services, which is really great. And we love to see that. But it's not all great. The yellow slice at the bottom, as you can see, 5% of our state budget goes towards prisons and policing. So these are agencies such as the Department of Corrections and Washington State Patrol that focus on arresting and incarcerating people. And that this disproportionately harms Black and Brown people and does very little to actually improve public safety. On the other hand, as you can see next to it in that green slice, the economic security category represents only 2% of our state budget. That's less than half of what goes towards prisons and policing. So this is one area where we really hope to push our lawmakers to make greater investments to be aligned with our values of promoting economic security and well-being. So our state budget funds very important services, but unfortunately, state funding has dropped significantly over the years. As you can see from these bar charts, state spending is significantly lower in the 2021 to 23 budget compared to 25 years ago, 1995 to 1997. So the 2021 to 2023 budget was $64 billion, which is nearly $10 billion less than the 1995 to 1997 budget. And it was only with significant federal COVID relief dollars that our state budget met the spending levels from the mid-1990s. Our state has grown tremendously over the past 25 years. And to keep up with the growing needs of our state, our lawmakers must boost and sustain funding. Now I'm going to go into our budget process and talk about how you can get involved and how to make sure that your priorities are included in the state budget. So first, it's important to know that there are, you'll hear two different terms when it comes to talking about the state budget, the biennial budget and the supplemental budget. And the biennial budget, like its name implies, covers 2 years, usually the odd years. So for example, in the last slide, I talked about the 2021 to 2023 budget. And in between that, you have during the even years, the supplemental budget. And that supplemental budget makes adjustments or supplements the biennial budget. And the biennial, the budgets start on July 1st. So the fiscal year is from July 1st to June 30th. So after the legislature passes the budget in the spring and session ends, the budget will go into effect starting July 1st. So we talked a bit about this cycle between the biennial and supplemental budget. And another important thing to know are the key budget decision makers. And there are three people who have a lot of power when it comes to deciding on the budget. That's the chairs of the House Appropriations Committee and the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Right now that's Representative Tim Ormsby and Senator Christine Rolfes, and the governor. So the chairs of the Appropriations Committee and Ways and Means Committee write the budgets in their respective chambers. So they each will release a budget. And so they have a lot of power in what goes into their budgets and what doesn't make it into their budgets. Although the full committees must adopt the budget, including any proposed amendments, deletions, or provisos, which we'll talk about later. And the governor's office will submit a proposed budget before the legislative session starts. And the governor's Office of Financial Management, or OFM, will review agencies' budget requests and determine what moves forward. Agencies cannot ask for funding that isn't in the governor's budget. And after the legislature passes the budget, it will go to the governor. And at that point, the governor still has a lot of power because he can veto entire line items from the budget. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the process and timeline for the state budget. And I know that there is a lot on this slide, so I'll try to go over it very slowly and clearly. And this is the typical timeline for during a long session that ends in April. So the budget process really begins before session in early fall. That's when, as I was mentioning earlier, state agencies will submit their budget requests to the Governor's Office of Financial Management. And during this time, so at the bottom half of the screen, you can see different actions that anyone can take to get involved in the state budget process. So at this time, you can contact the governor's office, which is really happening right now, and advocate for your priorities or equitable revenue to be included in his budget proposal. In mid-November, the revenue forecast will come out. And that I will talk more in depth about later. The governor will use this revenue forecast to determine his budget and revenue proposals and in mid-December. And then session starts in January. And once session starts, the House and the Senate will both hold public hearings in their respective chambers on the governor's budget. So the governor's budget actually will have a bill number, and there'll be a public hearing for that. So anyone can attend the hearing for the budget bills. You can either attend in person, online, or submit written testimony to share what you like or don't like about the budget, what you think is missing, and what needs to be added to the budget. After that, the next revenue forecast will come out in the middle of March, and then the House and the Senate will release their respective budgets. And then again, There will be a public hearing on it. You can attend and give public testimony and talk about what you want, what you like or dislike about the House and Senate budget. And then the budget will get voted on, it will get approved by the legislature, and then it goes to the governor. And like I mentioned earlier, the governor can take action. He could veto certain items, and then it goes into effect on July 1st. All right, so next I want to talk about how to find and understand budget documents. So there are two places that you can go to find the budget documents. And I want to add, you know, when we're during this budget process, when I talk about, you know, the House and Senate will release their budget proposals and you can testify and say what you like or don't like about it. You first need to know where to find the budget and know what is in the budget. So these are the places that you can go to find the budget documents. The governor's budget is available through the Office of Financial Management or ofm.wa.gov, and the legislative budgets are released by the Legislative Evaluation and Accountability Program, or LEAP, and you can go to fiscal.wa.gov to find the budget documents. For the legislative budget documents, there are many different documents that are released when the House and Senate release their budgets, but I want to cover four different documents. That's the budget bill, the summary, agency detail, and budget outlook. So if you go on fiscal.wa.gov and you look at their proposed budgets, you will find these different documents. And the budget bill is a bill. During a long session, it's almost 1,000+ pages, and it's written in bill language. So it's very difficult to understand. It's really hard to find the policy that you want to be funded. And I like to think of this document as really the one that hardcore budget geeks will look at. So if you don't look at this and if you don't understand this, that's totally fine, because the legislature also thankfully releases a summary. And this is a high level summary of the appropriations. This is just a screenshot of one page of that. As you can see, it's much more digestible, and it just summarizes those appropriations and divides it into bigger buckets like healthcare, K-12, higher education, social and health services. The agency detail document is actually my favorite document. It's a detailed appropriations broken down by agency or department and by specific policy changes. So if you know, you know, the department that your policy falls under, you can look in the agency detail document, find the department. For example, here you see the Department of Health, and look down this list and find your policy. You can see if it's included or not under that department, and you can see how much was appropriated for your policy. So I find this to be the most clear and helpful document. And then lastly, there's the budget outlook, which is really just a one-page balance sheet of the state revenues and appropriations for the current and next biennium. So it's for the current 2 years and the next 2 years. Okay, so next I will talk about the revenue forecast. And the revenue forecast is released by the Economic and Revenue Forecast Council. So they release both an economic forecast and a revenue forecast. And the revenue forecast is an estimate of state general fund revenues for the current and future biennia. So for the current 2 years and then the next 2 years. And they're released four times a year, February or March, depending on if it's a short session or a long session, June, September, and November. And the most important forecasts really are the ones that are released in November, because the governor will use this forecast to determine his proposed budget. And then the February, March forecasts are used for the final legislative budget that's passed in the spring. And how does it affect the budget? So our state has constitutional duty to balance its budget. And so the revenue forecast tells us how much, we need to know how much money is coming in so that we know how much our state can spend. And if the forecast is low and there is a forecasted deficit and revenues are dropping, then our state may need to cut spending. And on the other hand, if the forecast is high, so there's a projected surplus, then our state can do one of three things, or two of the three things, which is to spend it, which we typically advocate for so that we can put our money back into our community. And our state funding has been dropping. It has not kept up with the needs in our community. And it's only with that federal, you know, the COVID relief dollars that we were able to get a boost in much needed community priorities. So we can spend it, can also put it into reserves, or what is called the budget stabilization account, or rainy day fund, and save that for future use in emergencies. Or three, the state can cut taxes, which we typically oppose if they are broad, untargeted tax cuts. Now, this is a pie chart showing where our state general fund tax revenue comes from. And as you can see, the greatest source of revenue comes from retail sales and use tax. That's 52% of our total state tax revenue. The retail sales and use tax is an extremely regressive tax because it is applied the same for everybody regardless of income. So it doesn't matter if you make minimum wage or if you are a millionaire, say you pay the same percentage on your sales tax. And this is one reason why our state tax code is so regressive and so inequitable. And you can see the other sources of tax revenue are the greatest percent is from business and occupation tax, property tax, real estate and excise tax. And then 8% comes from just a bunch of other taxes such as liquor tax, cigarette and tobacco tax, timber tax, estate tax. One thing that you will see is that we do not have a personal income tax or corporate income tax, which is another reason why our state tax code is so regressive. But we did pass the capital gains tax in 2021, and there are ongoing efforts for a wealth tax. So these are levers that we can push to make our state tax code more progressive. All right, we are near the end. So number six, FISCO notes. What are FISCO notes? When you're trying to pass a policy, oftentimes you'll hear, you know, what's the FISCO note? You know, what's the FISCO note attached to this bill? And the FISCO note is a cost estimate of implementing a policy. So it tells you, you know, if this policy is passed, how much would it cost? And when a bill is introduced in the legislature, the committee staff will determine if it's likely to use state funds. And if they determine that it is above a certain amount, then it will go to the Office of Financial Management, or OFM. And OFM will turn to the agency that's impacted by that bill to determine the cost of implementing the bill. And that agency will break down, you know, the number of employees and staff time, overhead, even supplies such as like printing costs, paper costs, and fold all of that into a FISCO note, and that's attached to the bill. So if you go to the bill info page for a policy and scroll down to the bottom, you'll find the FISCO note for that bill. How does a FISCO note affect the budget? If the bill passes the legislature, then the amount in the FISCO note must be incorporated into a budget. And as you can guess, if the FISCO note is very high, then it may decrease the chance of that bill passing the legislature. And so what you can do is, if the FISCO note seems too high, you could go to that agency and discuss with them their assumptions and try to lower that FISCO note to increase your chance of passing the bill. And I just have a screenshot of a FISCO note for the Working Families Tax Credit. You can see there's estimated cash receipts. So that's, you know, an estimate of how much the state will either bring in or disperse. And then there's estimated operating expenditures. And you can see that the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee And also the Department of Revenue estimates, you know, their costs for staff time or other equipment and expenses, and there's no impact on the capital budget. All right, so lastly, we'll talk about provisos. A proviso is essentially a line item in the budget that can fund your project or program without having to pass legislation. So without having to go through the entire process of having your bill introduced into policy committee and then moving to the fiscal committee and then going over to the other chamber and repeating that same process, you can try to just get it into the budget bill. And how you do that is you need to have a legislator to put in a proviso request to the budget writers. It's probably going to change, but in the past, it has been a kind of simple synopsis of why this proviso is important, why your project is important, and the request amount. And legislators can also put in a letter of support from other legislators to put more weight to that proviso. But the budget writers really are the ones who determine if that proviso will be included into the final budget or not. And there are considerations such as, you know, the politics and policy considerations if there's bipartisan support. But there are many provisos that are requested and a lot doesn't make it into the budget. So that is the end of our presentation. So I just want to thank everyone for joining and for listening to us. I think we have some time for questions. So can a proviso only be for a policy or program that is pre-existing? No, you could have a proviso. I can give an example, actually, last session. So we're trying to pass a statewide guaranteed basic income pilot. And so, you know, this is a new program, and we introduced that legislation last session. It did not pass out of the policy committee. And so we tried to go the proviso route and request funding for a basic income pilot in the state. So, you know, this pilot did not exist before. And so we just wanted to request funding to start a pilot.
There's a question about what role does the Budget and Policy Center play in the budget process?
Thanks for that question. I would say that our role really is to provide a high-level budget analysis during the budget when the budgets are released. There are many other organizations and advocates that focus on one specific part of the budget, such as early learning, housing, healthcare. And we do just, like a high level overview of all of those things. And also looking at some of the charts that I showed before, we will reproduce them to show funding over time, funding compared to the maintenance level, which Kristen talked a little bit about, which is, you know, the amount of money that is needed to maintain current services and how much money is being invested in above that level. And we also work with advocates across the state and in different sectors to hear what their priorities are. And we also advocate for those priorities. So we also have a legislative agenda that's more focused around fiscal policies, such as progressive revenue or giving cash back to people. And we'll advocate to legislators for that too. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Tracy, for your work on this budget presentation. A full transcript of this episode and additional resources are in the show notes and on our website at budgetandpolicy.org/podcast. Based on our staff capacity, we can give a Budget 101 presentation by request. Go to our website and submit a form to request a speaker, and we will connect with you about arranging one for your group. Thank you for listening to WA Possible. You can learn more about our work on our website, budgetandpolicy.org, and connect with us on social media @budget_policy. WA Possible is sponsored by the Economic Security Project, the Washington State Council of Firefighters, AARP of Washington, and the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance. Our theme music was created by Spokane beatmaker Ray Vunthakela, and the WA Possible logo was designed by Seattle-based artist Eileen Jimenez. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, giving us a review, and sharing our podcast with your friends and family.